Mysticism is one of those words in religious discourse that sometimes is so broad and overused that it's become useless. It's sort of white noise, and that you don't actually know what anyone means by it, because it could mean so very many different things. And Unitarian Universalists, we sometimes have an interesting relationship to mysticism, to mystical thinkers, and mystics from different religious traditions. And we certainly have a favorite, right? That Unitarian Universalists, our favorite mystic is Rumi. Yeah. Rumi, who was a Persian poet, and we often, right, he's often described as a Sufi mystic. And it's interesting that he's our favorite because he brings up something that so is at the core of the complicated dimension of engaging with mysticism for me, which is that, right, or one of the complicated dimensions of it, which is that we so often separate Rumi and other sort of Sufi mystics out from the heritage that they're grounded in, from their Islam. Right, and the idea that you could separate Sufism from Islam is itself a construction of British Orientalists. Reverend Hannah ruins everything. Right, it's itself a construction of British Orientalists who desperately wanted to engage with the beautiful poetry of Rumi, but definitely did not want to engage with the deeper ethical and theological questions of Islam. Right? And I offer this just as a reminder that as we think about engaging in those different mystical practices, right, as we dabble in seated meditation, as we dabble in the labyrinth, in coloring a mandala, in singing a chant, that we are engaging with deep traditions. Right? Like, meditation was not invented yesterday. Buddhism, also not yesterday. And definitely not by your friend who discovered it yesterday. Yeah, so there's a depth of possibility in mysticism when we are sort of willing to get past some of the surface of those mystical practices. Right? Because when we live sort of in that surface area of mysticism and practices, it's easy to write mysticism off as like new agey, woo-woo. Has anyone ever written stuff off as new agey or woo-woo? Confess, I know you're out there. I'm not the only one. Right, but right, it's a false paradox to think that mysticism is somehow disengaged from the real world, right? From our day-to-day lives, from human struggle. Right, because at its best, what mysticism does, at least in my estimation, is that it engages us beyond certainty. Right? It engages us beyond the certain, looking for a more pure, more real, more deep and authentic connection with the holy. Right? It's about pursuing that depth of connection. It's a chance, for me, at least, to learn about that which is most essential, right? That which is at the essence. That which is at the essence of who we are as human beings, living and struggling and loving. Right? It's like the reading said, like David Cooper said, it empowers us to follow the call that seems to beckon from somewhere out there, right? It's at the edge of possibility. It's at the edge of our intellect. It's at the edge of what seems logical or real or possible. But in fact, it is not coming from out there or beyond. It is deep, deep within. It's at the core of who we are. At the core of who we are. And those mystical practices, right? Sometimes mysticism there's this idea that it's something you do on your own, right? That mystics, like, can't get along with other people. Or that they somehow would, like, struggle with interpersonal relationships. But in fact, for me, what mysticism does is that it opens that deep, essential place within me, right, at the core of who I am. And it connects with that place in you. And it connects with that essential place, that essence of what it means to be human in you. That we get to build that space where we can do that. And I don't know about you, but I feel like sometimes our world is lacking places where we connect on a deeply humane level. Some might even describe our world as inhumane. Right? That there is a way that it can open us up to what's possible. Deep, deep within us. Right? That we live in a world where it seems like sometimes all that we imagine is how much worse it could get. And every time you think you've imagined exactly how worse it can get, ha ha, wrong, it got worser. Got worser real quick. Right, that there's, and it feels like that those are the stories we tell over and over again, and those are the stories that we are being told over and over again, is that we're trapped in this place where the only muscle we exercise is the one where we worry about how bad it's going to get. But there is a different muscle that those mystery practices help us access, right? That chant, that dance, that visual art, that music, that song, that writing, it helps us access the place, the essence, maybe even the muscle deep within us that knows how to hope. Right? Because the reality is that humanity did not make it this far by only thinking about how terrible life could be. Right? That what mystical practices, what mysticism, what connecting to the mystery can do for us, at least what it does for me, is that it connects me to that deep place of imagination within me. Right? Not the place that imagines just how awful it could be next week, but a place that can imagine a different world. Right? It's a muscle that sometimes I think we are accustomed to using in our childhood and our youth, and we forget. We close it off and neglect it as we age. Not all of us, but some of us. Right? We forget that we have the capacity deep within us, at the very core of who we are as human beings, we have the capacity to imagine a world that is different than the one we live in. Right? We have the capacity to see more than one possibility. We have the capacity to know a different future. Right? And that lives deep within us and even within our neighbors, within the person sitting next to you, within the person across the street, right? That same capacity to imagine a better world lives deep within them. It lives deeper in us than in some others. But for me, what mystery and what mysticism can do is that it can connect us to that place of possibility. And sometimes it does that by teaching us to let go of the things that we think need to be certain about our lives and about our world. It teaches us to let go of our, like, vice grip that, like, we have to do the rational or logical thing because that's the only way that we can move forward. But sometimes we need to sort of let go. And for me, that's why I love group singing as a sort of a way to connect to the mystical and to one another. Right? That it is not about singing exactly what's printed on the page. It's not about hitting the right notes. It's about knowing that I know how to sing this song. Deep within me, I am capable. And so are you. And when we sing together, something new is created. A place in me that is not caught up in form or function or rationality gets to connect to that place in you. Even if just for a little bit. And these stories, right, about people who have accessed this deep possibility, right, this sort of deep, holy imagination within themselves. Our fictional pantheon is full of these kinds of heroes, right? As I was sort of churning the mental compost bin, wondering whose story I could retell as an example, right, of a hero who accessed this deep imaginative place within themselves and then went out and slayed the dragon and did the thing. There's tons of them, right? There's the Harry Potters who imagine a world where all are equal and none live under the rule of mean old Lord Voldemort, right? There's the Bilbo Bagginses, right, from the Lord of the Rings, who he imagined that there is a different world possible, even in the face of ridiculous odds, believes that he is capable with his friends of surmounting evil, even though everything around him suggests that evil is going to prevail. He can imagine a better world and seeks it fervently. And as I came up with fictional hero after fictional hero after fictional hero, I thought, goodness, couldn't we get some real life people who accessed this deep imaginative capacity for a better world? And I struggled. I struggled to think of times in the real world, in our real interpersonal everyday lives, that people are really accessing this deep place of hope and possibility and imagination. Because it seems like all that we are ever invited to do is think about how bad it's going to get, is think about what terrible thing will happen next. Instead of being invited to connect with the most possible thing within us. And as is often the case when I think that I don't have any examples and there's nothing to be said, and oh my goodness, they're like, I'll never come up with a story to talk about this, one comes and just like smashes me in the face. So I, as Sean said, I serve up at the church, the Unitarian Church in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that's where I live, and that's where I make my home. I'm also an out queer person, which some people feel like is incompatible with the whole like mental concept of Wyoming. They're like, how does that work? And I'm just like, there's a lot of leather vests in the middle of the Venn diagram. Right there in the middle. But what the story that, and the time and the place in which I experienced an incredible human capacity for hope and imagination and possibility and holy futures was at a procedural hearing for the state legislature. Yes. You're like, wow, I didn't know it would take such a boring and dry turn so fast. It's like a hard turn into real, like, procedural nerddom. But so it was a meeting of the management council of the state legislature. And the management council in the Wyoming state legislative constellation are the people who sort of make the rules governing the legislature, right? How the legislature will meet and what rules govern the employees of the state legislature. And about a year ago, the Legislative Services Office had decided to do a very normal thing. They had decided to update their sexual harassment and anti-discrimination policy to include the categories sexual orientation and gender identity on the list of protected classes, which meant that anybody who worked for the state legislature couldn't discriminate against people or harass them based on those categories. Those of you who follow the fortunes of Wyoming will perhaps guess that this is not headed to the sunniest of places. Right, that what happened was that folks who claimed that queer people's right not to be discriminated against impinges against their freedom of religion rose up and demanded a public hearing for the inclusion of this language in their internal legislative services policy. Okay, and so we had to organize. I thought, goodness, this cannot be the only faith voice. We need to respond as people of faith. We need to say that there are people of faith in Wyoming who believe that LGBTQ people are holy and beloved and, you know, inherent worth, blah, 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 that old song and dance. When you live there, it's like actually tiresome. You're like, oh, okay, again. I have inherent worth and dignity, I guess. I guess we'll do this again, because it didn't stick the first time. On the night before the Management Council hearing, we held an organizing circle at the congregation where I serve. And right, the people who showed up to get prepped to testify in front of the Management Council the next day were not... It was not some like ragtag band of like scrappy young activists who are all like agitating and, that, you know, paid protesters, that kind of thing. Most of the people who gathered in that circle, both folks who were members of the congregation and folks who I had never met from the wider community, that they were my queer elders, though they would never call themselves elders. We are a people who don't age. Elder by rank, not by age. They were my queer elders, right? People who were some newer to Wyoming, some who had lived there their entire lives, who showed up because they are deeply connected with the place within themselves that says that there is a different future possible. Not a logical future, not a reasonable future, but the kind of holy, hopeful future that is only possible when you have exercised that muscle of imagination within yourself over and over and over again, year after year. And goodness, people who gave testimony about what it felt like to finally be out in their 70s, in their 80s, what it felt like to finally feel like there was something coming to fruition, like something else might be possible. Goodness knows, queer people up in places like Wyoming cannot rely on logic or rationality to keep our hope alive. We must rely on a place deep within us that speaks to another world that might be possible. And we must rely on that place within you that teaches you that there might be something better. And we must rely on the moments that we can connect from that place. Not from a place where we're both afraid, not from a place where we're both just worried, not from a place where we just can't agree, but from a place where we both know deep in the core of our souls that something different is possible. how exactly we get there is a mystery. But we can get there. We can glimpse that connection. May we all find ways to flex that muscle of hope, of imagination, possibility. May it be so.